Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on Nova M. Thanks for tuning in. This is one of those nights we have too much to smash into a three-hour program. Joining us next hour, Mark Crispin Miller will be on the program. He has a new book out, Loser Take All, Election Fraud and the Subversion of Democracy from 2000 to 2008. excuse me. We're looking forward to that. Also, I want to get to this a little bit later tonight. There is a report out, put out by the Department of Veterans Affairs. And when the program's over tonight, we will post a link so you can go to this report and download it yourself. But it indicates of the 6.8 million Americans who have served in the military since the 1990 Gulf War, almost 3 million of them are dead. I got this today from someone who sent this to me. The total number of members of the service in starting in 1990, the Gulf War, 6,838,541. Estimated living veterans, 4,425,866. Now, this only includes from 1990. This is not Vietnam or Korea or World War II. There seems to be 2.3 million dead American soldiers who have served in the two Gulf Wars. If this is true, what is killing? I don't know. We'll get to it a little bit later. The main thing I want to get to tonight, of course, is Scott McClellan's book. We started this this is Thursday night. We started it Tuesday night when the story first broke. Politico.com, in a late entry on their website, put up excerpts from the book. We started talking about this Tuesday night. On Wednesday, it started to develop, and today, of course, all hell broke loose on some of these revelations. But let me remind you that in January of this year, the Center for Public Integrity published a report that showed on nearly, or at least 935 occasions, false statements were made about the Iraq War. Now, I realize Scott McClellan covers certainly more territory than that. He covers, from what I've heard, I haven't read the book yet, the lies about Iraq, but also the Katrina horror, on and on. It's astonishing the number of so-called revelations Scott McClellan makes in his book. And I watched the entire hour of Keith Olbermann tonight with his interview with Scott McClellan. And Scott McClellan, his claims are not ringing true for me. I mean, okay, everybody can talk about, well, look, he's the first one to really rat this administration out. I have yet to hear anything that hasn't been reported. TVNewsLies.com had this stuff up 3 years ago. Center for Public Integrity did a massive database research project and came up with 935 false statements in the 2 years following September 11th about the national security threat that Saddam Hussein was supposed to pose. Robert Perry at ConsortiumNews.com has been writing about this for 3 years. I don't quite get. I guess it's because we are a celebrity obsessed and saturated society. Therefore, when someone like Scott McClellan says something, a bunch of some things that have been repeated over and over and over again. I mentioned this the other night by various online news organizations, or a couple of radio programs, among them this one, the same stories over and over and over again for 3, 4, 5 years, And now all of a sudden Scott McClellan's book is out and the media is peeing all over itself about this. They can't get enough of Scott McClellan. They also are giving equal time to these rat bastards who still infest this government, our country, who are declaring Scott McClellan to be some sort of a misguided apostate or a disgruntled former employee or whatever. But insofar as Scott McClellan's revelations here and his claims, like tonight on Oberman, he said, yeah, I lied about, what did he lie about? He lied about the Plame affair. And I'm sitting here screaming at the television. No, Scotty, it wasn't just the Plame affair. You lied about everything that you said for the entire time that you were press secretary. Now, I know a lot of people have said, well, Scott McClellan's really a nice man, yada, yada, yada. I'm sure there are people, a bad analogy here, but I'm sure there are people who said Hitler was a nice man. Nice man, my ass. This is a guy who stood there for 3 years and not only sold lies to the American public, but berated anyone who had the temerity to challenge these lies, question their patriotism, accused them of all sorts of deviant behavior because they were sitting in the press room refusing to go along with what this rat bastard was saying. I'm not part of the Scott McClellan choo-choo train. Oberman said at the end of his hour-long interview tonight before he went to John Dean, he told McClellan that McClellan's book was so important that it would become probably a part of history at some point. If it does, I think, and no offense to Keith Olbermann, but if it does become part of history, then it's further proof that the teaching of history in this country is in the toilet. This is not a piece of history. This is somebody who's and I don't care how much money he makes on his book. I don't give a damn about that. Somebody wants to write a book, make money, go for it. This is somebody who's put together a book that states almost word for word what, if the American public had been listening, not to mainstream media, but to the so-called non-mainstream media for the past 5 years, you would have heard all this. There's nothing new here. What, did Bush authorize the leak of Plame's name? Oh, big revelation, huh? That lies were told about Saddam Hussein? Oh, big revelation, huh? Scott Ritter was talking about that in 2002, for Christ's sake. Nah. Malloy ain't getting on the Scott McClellan train. I hope the guy makes $1 million selling his book. Go for it. But to me, he is as much of a ghoul and a flesh eater as Dick Cheney. Every single one of this pack of sons of bitches who have done this to the country is guilty. Every single one of them. And if the fantasy war crimes trial is ever held, put McClellan right in the dock with the rest of them. Matter of fact, move him to the front of the line. Talk about integrity or lack thereof. At what point in Scott McClellan's filthy career as the White House press secretary, at what point should he have said, wait a goddamn minute, I can't participate in this? This is deception on a scale unknown in this country. I can't do this. This is setting the country up for murder on a massive scale of American soldiers and Iraqi civilians. I can't do this. But he didn't. And now this weaselly little fart is making the rounds of the talk show, talk programs on television, sitting there with that moon pie, starstruck kind of blank look. Well, what happened? I'll tell you what happened when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Done. listening to Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
21 past the hour. Charles Lewis and Mark Redding Smith, writing at the Center for Public Integrity 6 months ago, point out the fact that Bush and seven of his administration's top officials, including Dick Cheney, Condoleezza Rice, Don Rumsfeld, made at least 935 false statements in the 2 years following September 11th, 2001, about the national security threat posed by Iraq. And as they said 6 months ago, 5 years after the U.S. invasion of Iraq, in the examination of the record shows that the statements were part of an orchestrated campaign to whip you and me into war fever under false pretense and make us agree that war was necessary under completely false pretenses, which means great big, nasty-ass, blood-soaked lies. And, of course, the media's participation in this is the one thing I don't think Scott McClellan or anybody is paying too much attention to. They are the ones who had the power at one time the career of media, if that's the way to put it, a free press, so-called. They had the power at one time until they gave it away in exchange for nonsense about the movie stars and these stupid-ass stories that have absolutely no relevance whatsoever to how we live our lives. But what they gave away was the power to have stopped George W. Bush or any president from waging a war based on lies. Media in this country have become not just lazy, they have become complicit in every single destructive thing that happens in this country simply because they go along with it. They do not investigate. They take White House handouts, press handouts, and that's the basis of their stories. When I think of Judith Miller, the New York Times, and it's not just her, Jeff Gerth and a whole handful of these at the time, highly paid bastards who were willing to suck from the Bush crime family anything they could get. And the Bush crime family was happy to be sucked on anything they could get to slam on the front pages of the New York Times, the Washington Post, L.A. Times, whatever the newspaper was. The complicity of media is to me, that's the outrage. That's the outrage. Of course a politician is going to lie. Of course an idiotic, megalomaniac, freak, drug-using coward like George Bush is going to want to prove his manhood, not in a bar fight in Texas, but by waging war against a country that can't defend itself and against whom we have absolutely no reason to attack. That's how George Bush reclaims his testicles that were removed surgically by his mother's teeth at God knows what tender age. And the rest of the country has to go along with the bloodbath that ensues from George Bush trying to become a man finally. George, you won't become a man until your parents are dead. And maybe not even then in your case. On 532 separate occasions, in speeches, briefings, interviews, testimony, Bush, along with Colin Powell, Paul Wolfowitz, Ari Fleischer, and Scott McClellan, 532 separate occasions, stated unequivocally that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction, that Iraq had links to Al-Qaeda, or both. This was the effort that constituted the underpinning of Bush's war in Iraq. For Scott McClellan to come out with a book now, or any of these filthy, murderous sons of bitches, what happened? Oh, please, McClellan. What happened? Everybody has known, for how long have we known this, that this Bush crime family took this country to war on the basis of lies. that it methodically propagated and used the media, and the media were happy to be used. Oh, yes, let's go. Let's go. Into this war. Not surprisingly, it says at the Center for Public Integrity, the officials with the most opportunities to make speeches, grant media interviews, and otherwise frame the public debate also made the most false statements. So here we sit with, Scott McClellan's revelations. Can't talk tonight. I'll post this in my website from the Center for Public Integrity. We'll post it tonight, and you can take your time to read it. But I'll guarantee you, unless you're some mouth-breathing, thumb-sucking, jackass Fox television news viewer, Limbaugh listener, Republican, you're not going to find anything in here that's new. And if you do fit into that category just stated, you are not going to be able to read it anyway because you're an ass. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. The whole Scott McClellan thing will end rather quickly because media don't want to mess with this. They don't want it to finally sink in as we watch interview after redundant interview. Now he's going to be on media whore number one, Tim Russert's Meet the Press this Sunday. He's really out there on the tour. I'm surprised that as he is being interviewed by everybody from Keith Olbermann to media whore number one Tim Russert to Martha Raddatz to Vieira, what's her name, Meredith Vieira, the morning talk, all these people, I'm just wondering at what point one of them would just, set aside the written questions and say, Scott, you lying son of a bitch, you had people from our organization sit there and absorb your lies. And then Scott could say, well, you dumbasses, why didn't you do something rather than sit there and absorb my lies? I just wish it would come to that. I wish both sides could get honest in this. This is a joke. This whole thing is a joke. Media are reporting this now as though there's some big goddamn revelation here. Because Scott McClellan says it? I mean, by his own admission, he is a liar. By your and my canny powers of observation, we know that he is complicit in selling the war, among other things, to the American public. And now he's out on book tour. Oh! And even somebody I respect, like Keith Olbermann, sits there for an hour and lets this monkey climb all over him? Hi, yay, 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 yay. Scott wants to know what happened. A couple of writers from McClatchy newspapers know what happened. Here's what happened. The Bush administration was gunning for Iraq within days of the 9/11 attacks, dispatching a former CIA director whom Deputy Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz dispatched to find evidence for a bizarre theory that Saddam Hussein was responsible for the first World Trade Center attack in 1993. Here's also what happened. Bush decided by February 2002 at the latest that he was going to invade Iraq. Here's what happened. White House officials led by Dick Cheney began making the case for war in August 2002 in speeches and reports that not only were wrong, but also went well beyond what the available intelligence said at that time and contained outright fantasies and lies. Indeed, some of that material was never vetted with the intelligence agencies before it was peddled to the public. Here's what happened, Scott. Dissenters, or even those who voiced worry about where the policy was going, were ignored, excluded, or punished. People like General Eric Shinseki, Paul O'Neill, Joseph Wilson, the State Department's Arab specialists, and much of its intelligence bureau. Hey, Scott, here's what happened. The Bush administration didn't even want to produce the National Intelligence Estimate on Iraq's weapons of mass destruction programs that's received so much criticism. The White House thought it was unneeded. It actually was demanded by Congress and slapped together in a matter of weeks before the congressional votes to authorize war on Iraq. Hey, Scott! Here's what happened. In October 2002, NIE, National Intelligence Estimate, was flawed. It contained dissents questioning the extent of Saddam's weapons programs, dissents that were buried in the report. Doubts and dissents were then stripped from the publicly released unclassified version of this NIE. Hey, Scott, here's what happened. The core of this administration case for war was not just that Saddam was developing WMDs, but also that unchecked, he might give them to terrorists to attack the United States. Remember smoking guns and mushroom clouds? The CIA had determined just the opposite. Saddam couldn't attack the U.S. Giving weapons of mass destruction to terrorists was seen as his by Saddam as a last chance to exact revenge if he were invaded, his country were invaded. Here's what happened, Scott. The Bush administration relied on an Iraqi exile, Ahmad Shalabi, who had been found to be untrustworthy by the State Department and the CIA. Shalabi and his toy Iraq National Congress were given millions and produced all sorts of phony defectors whose tales of these weapons sites and terrorist trainings were false, fanciful, bogus, lies fed directly to senior officials and included White House documents. It just goes on and on. What happened, my ass? What happened was the Supreme Court on December 12th, 2000, ended representative government permanently in this country. So they think. By putting this son of a bitch in office. And then in 2004, the machines were jiggered to the point where he got to stay for another 4 years. That's what happened, Scott. And you were part of it. Oh, I'm sick of these people. I'm sick of this guy is no John Dean. This guy is a punk. This guy is a war criminal. This guy is a liar. His career is lies. And he may have been fired. He was fired possibly because he couldn't do the lies anymore. Did he quit? Did he resign in protest? Who was the guy, the Gerald Ford's press secretary, Jerry Terhorst, who resigned in protest because Gerald Ford, as one of his first acts, issued a blanket pardon to Dick Nixon, which ended any further criminal activity, prosecution against that murderous Republican bastard. Why didn't Scott McClellan do the same thing? Because Scott McClellan is a liar and is complicit in war crimes and stood there day after day for 3 years pumping this country full of stories he knew to be lies. Don't tell me he didn't know. Don't even try. Vincent Bugliosi, whose book was just released, titled The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder, said today, I've not had an opportunity to read McClellan's book, but I read a quote from it in the New York Times in which McClellan says, quote, Iraq was a series of strategic blunders, end quote. If this is his position, Bugliosi writes, he and I couldn't be further apart. A blunder is a mistake. Mistakes are by definition innocent and never criminal. In my book, I present incontrovertible evidence that George W. Bush knowingly and deliberately took this nation to war on a lie, under false pretenses, and is therefore guilty of murder. So my position is diametrically opposed to Mr. McClellan's. Bugliosi goes on to say, quote, in taking us to war in Iraq, not only were Bush's allegations false, but also, and much more importantly, Bush knew that the allegations he used were untrue. And he goes on and on. Robert Perry, whose latest book is Neck Deep, The Disastrous Presidency of George W. Bush. Perry just wrote a piece called Surprise, Surprise, Bush Lied at consortiumnews.com. Perry says in there, quote, some may view ex-White House Press Secretary Scott McClellan's new book as vindication for those who took grief, accused of derangement and treason and a bunch of less printable things, for calling George W. Bush a liar over the past 8 years. But the more troubling point is that there has been little improvement in the Washington political and media structure that failed to call Bush out on his lies in a timely fashion. Perry says, in Iraq alone, the consequences for that dereliction of duty include more than 4,000 U.S. dead, along with hundreds of thousands of slain Iraqis and possibly trillions of taxpayer dollars wasted. Though Bush's White House and his Republican allies may stand out as the principal villains in this tragic story, a large share of the blame also must fall on accommodating Democrats and careerists in the Washington Press Corps. They protected their political flanks and their nice salaries by playing along. Perry goes on, it also wasn't hard to figure out that Bush was a brazen liar. He began rewriting the history after the Iraq invasion by telling reporters that Hussein was the one who chose war by barring United Nations inspectors, which was a lie. But facing no serious challenge to that lie from the White House press corps, Bush continued repeating it as part of his public litany for defending the invasion. Now, I'll tell you what, for folks who are just all a Twitter about McClain's revelations about, oh my God, please get real. Wake up. Smell the coffee. This stuff has been out there for 5 years.
What's best is for Don Rumsfeld to remain as the Secretary of Defense.
Sitting in a White House garden talking to the Lord. But my thoughts would be busy, busy hatching if I only had a brain. I am the egghead. I'm the commander. I'm the giant. You know it's hard out here for a pimp. When he tryna get his money for the rent. For the Cadillac and gas money spent.
I'd like to know who leaked. If anybody's got any information, they ought to take it to the Justice Department so we can find out the leaker.
That's just one example of the unbelievable ability of this man to lie. When he said that, he knew full well that it was his decision to make, and he made it. Marion Myrtle Beach writes, Mike, after listening to the revelations by McClellan for 2 days, I'm wondering if Joe and Valerie Wilson could refile the lawsuit they lost earlier with much better evidence learned yesterday and today. I don't know. I heard John Dean tonight say on Keith Olbermann's program that it's probably too late to begin an impeachment investigation, this bastard. I disagree with that. I think the Of course, Nancy Pelosi deliberately ran the clock out, which I'm not quite sure why she did that, unless it's because she is another scum-sucking Washington politician who doesn't really care about truth, justice, and decency in this country. What am I saying? But as far as lawsuits, you know, lawsuits, small suits, I frankly don't care. Joe Wilson and Valerie Plame, I don't know. There's no point in pursuing anything about Wilson and Plame. They have made their effort. They, in fact, had, I'm not trying to be cynical here, but what the hell, this is the United States. They had their moment, their 15 minutes of fame. And the country has just moved way past that. The Plame affair is consigned to those events that eventually will go down the memory hole and will no longer exist. A lot of people have been saying for a very long time that the Bush administration is a collection of criminals of the worst sort, the kind of criminals that were determined deserved long prison sentences or hanging at the Nuremberg war crimes trials after World War II. This group is of the same stripe. They do not care about human life at all. They will invade countries for no reason. Lying is as natural to them as breathing. Anybody in this country who doesn't understand what sort of leadership we've had for the past 8 years is either a Republican or insane. Oops, I repeat myself. Who doesn't understand what these bastards have done? Who doesn't? Is it because every single day, every week, every month brings another flush of the toilet of the kind of garbage these people have dumped on America? Is that it? Every single day, there's something new. Every day, whether it's against veterans or against the citizens of New Orleans or against people who just want their children to be able to breathe clean air, or pick something, pick something. I put a challenge out here months ago. Any one of you filthy Republicans who can call this program or email and tell me one single thing that the Bush crime family or the Republican Party in the last 8 years has done that benefits Americans. One thing. Any one of you that can do that is either delusional or, I don't know, you've become Fox Newsed or something. They have done nothing except destroy, lie, deceive, cheat, steal. Steal. Don't even go there. Steal? These sons of bitches? Do you know, Bart Kopp's been talking about this for how many years? 8 years? Millions, billions, hundreds of billions of dollars stolen. And the Iraq occupation? Just a whirlpool of money just flowing into the hands of American criminals, contractors, thugs, liars, cheats, killers, sneaks. Jesus, God, will this ever end? So as far as Simple Scotty is concerned, I thought I really blew out my fuses about this freak back when it was so apparent for so long of the lies and the deception. Jesus, God, we played music put together by 12th Harmonic in Australia, for Christ's sake. The Scotty, the Duck Song. I mean, it never stopped. Night after night after night, we used to come on the air and just say, "What? This is crazy. The lies that are being told, the deception." And not just us. I think this started when we were at IE America, right, Kathy? When we had an audience of, what, six? I'm talking about people who had websites, who've been putting this stuff out, the truth out there, for how long? And it's been ignored. And now all of a sudden, Scott McClellan, the skunk, this rat steps out of the darkness and says, "Oh, I have a book. Look here. Look what I've written. Whoa. Surprise, surprise. It was all a lie." Oh, you ignorant twit. Who is surprised by this? And it's not, I mean, okay, somebody could make the argument, "Well, Mike, this is a Bush crime family insider. You know, none of you guys who talked about this were insiders. You were just guessing." Oh, bite me. What do you mean we were just guessing? The evidence is out there for anyone with more than a fourth grade education to figure out 5 years ago. Scott McClellan, get your 15 minutes, pal. Make your money and get the hell out of my sight. I can still smell you. Mark Crispin Miller when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. It's about 7 past the hour. If you're a regular listener to this program, to a lot of programs, but especially this one, you know of Mark Crispin Miller. He's a professor of media studies at New York University. He's the author of the book Fooled Again, How the Right Stole the 2004 Election. He also has the book out, Boxed In, The Culture of TV, Seeing Through Movies, Mad Science, just a whole lot of stuff. He has a new book, entitled Loser Take All, Election Fraud and the Subversion of Democracy, 2000 to 2008. Mark Crispin Miller has been a guest on the program a couple of times, and he joins us right now. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Mike. It's been too long.
It has been too long. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing okay, considering.
Yeah, I hear that. We watched, or I think we played on this program, one of the 7-minute YouTube videos. We played the audio, obviously, that you have out there now. What made you put those videos together?
Well, I'm quite worried about what may happen over the next several months
with Iran.
Well, with Iran and with the United States of America, as you know, you mentioned my last book, Fooled Again. I've done a lot of work on the Republicans' subversion of the voting system in this country. I've got a new book out called Loser Take All, which is a collection of 14 essays on various races that have been stolen since 2000, and most importantly, a number of essays on the steps the Republicans have been taking for the last few years to steal this November's election. But the reason why I did the video that you mentioned is that, as peculiar as this is going to sound, I actually think that, in a way, a stolen election may be the best-case scenario. And let me explain what I mean by that.
Okay.
I think that if they can get within 10 points of Obama, they will steal it. That is to say, they certainly have the wherewithal to steal it. They've made enough preparations to do that.
Oh, now wait. Let me ask: Who would steal it? Would the Republican candidate, or would you're talking about McCain, obviously? But
right.
he has to get the nomination first. Do you think there's a chance that the Clinton camp will steal it?
Well, the Clintons have been engaging in massive vote suppression over the last several months.
Right.
But I'm still fairly confident that Obama will be
okay.
the nominee.
All right. So you're talking about McCain and
yeah, I'm talking about McCain.
Right.
There is no doubt that between the various Jim Crow laws that the Republicans have passed over the last few months, their control of the voting machines, which are of course easily hacked and unverifiable. And with the Department of Justice in the party's hands conducting voter purges, or that is to say pressuring the states to conduct voter purges nationwide, which has been going on for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And I could go on. Loser take all goes into all these things that have been happening. But anyway, the optimistic scenario is that the Republicans will steal the election. And I say that that's my optimistic take because I actually am convinced that if these guys cannot steal the election, that they'll do something more drastic in order to prevent themselves from losing power and being forced out into the cold. We have to understand that the Bush regime is a criminal regime. I know you, of all people, certainly understand this.
Oh, God.
The point is they cannot really afford to be vulnerable to prosecution. They have a great deal to lose. I can't think of a law they haven't broken.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that being the case, it seems to me that if they cannot steal the election, that they're eminently capable of doing things far more dramatic than that to prevent power from changing hands.
Mm-hmm.
And the video deals specifically with the fact that the Bush administration changed the law governing continuity of government in the event of a catastrophic attack on the Capitol. This was about a year ago. National Security Directive 51, which people mm-hmm. can go and check. You know, you can Google that.
Yeah, I think a lot of people who listen to this program are real familiar with that one.
Okay, absolutely. I have to remember who your audience is. Well, at any rate, the video talks about that, the
right.
fact that the White House is now in charge of continuity of government, that they refuse to show the plans for that kind of emergency
mm-hmm.
to Representative Peter DeFazio of Oregon, even though he's on the Homeland Security Committee and has a security clearance. They refused to show him the plans and refused to explain why. And then over the last several months, there have been a number of mock evacuations and martial law exercises in Arkansas, Missouri, and Tennessee. Local law enforcement worked with FEMA on what one sheriff's deputy actually described as martial law exercises. There have been big mass evacuation drills in Chicago and outside of Washington. And just today, the newspaper in George W. Bush's own home away from home, Crawford, Texas, the Texas mm-hmm. Star Iconoclast, ran a piece about some kind of highly secret terror drill that's taking place in the British Petroleum plant in Texas City, which is actually Ron Paul's hometown.
Mm-hmm.
They've got the windows blocked off. This is a plant that has seen a number of fatal explosions over the last several years. Anyway, you know, this is the kind of thing that I ordinarily would shrug off as mere paranoid speculation. However, having studied what this crew has done with the elections and having watched them lie us into a war and out a CIA agent who's tracking weapons of mass destruction and let a city drown in this country. I could go on. This is stuff you all know very well. I cannot imagine what it is they would not do to prevent themselves from losing power.
Mm-hmm.
They are a profoundly un-American, anti-American outfit. So I think we have to be quite conscious of, you know, the electoral shenanigans that they're pulling off even as we speak. But I also think we have to be mindful of the possibility that they would do something even more dire. That's my view.
As you're talking, I don't remember the first time you were on my program as a guest. I know it goes back years and years and years. But I guess this is maybe your third or fourth time that you have been a guest. And I have to tell you, Mark, there's something in your voice this time, that is really, really, really concerned. When I have had you on before, I'm not saying you came across as professorial or kind of removed or anything, but at least there was something not in your voice these previous times that is in your voice now. You are you're really concerned about this, aren't you?
Yes, I am. I'm very concerned about it. I think that they're at their most dangerous when they're at risk, you know,
right,
and they're
right.
They're at risk. They're seriously at risk now. You know, with this Scott McClellan book coming out, it's as if the whole, you know, house of cards is collapsing. But, you know, I haven't even completed the litany of things that they have done by way of preparation. And, you know, I'll have to tell you, Mike, that, you know, you've been talking to me for years, and I've been talking about the theft of the 2004 election since that happened. And it has been really amazing to me how resolutely a lot of establishment figures, you know, Democrats, people in the media, even in the liberal, the really genuinely liberal media, the Nation, Mother Jones, how almost militantly they refuse to talk about this, even to acknowledge the evidence. The evidence is this is not speculation. You know, this is not guesswork about the election. This is by now absolutely solid, decisive evidence that this crew has actually never been elected. And it's amazing to me how people often don't want to face it. And it's that kind of denial, I think, that really puts us especially at risk.
I agree. Let me do a break here, and we'll come back in just a couple of minutes. We're talking with Professor Mark Crispin Miller. He's the author of his latest book, Loser Take All, Election Fraud and the Subversion of Democracy, 2000 to 2008. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Over soon. Take a deep breath. Find your happy place. It's more of Mike Malloy.
Yeah, I wish that were true. 21 past the hour, we're talking to Professor Mark Crispin Miller, professor of media studies, NYU, author of his latest book is Loser Take All, Election Fraud and the Subversion of Democracy, 2000 to 2008. How to phrase this? To what degree, or if you can put a numerical value on it, Mark, on what you have been talking about, the possibility that the Bush administration will make a move like this in order to prevent their loss of power. Can you give it a numerical value, 1 to 10 or a percentage or something?
I think it's a strong possibility. You know, I wouldn't rule anything out in their case. I think we should proceed on the assumption that they're going to try to steal the election, and we should respond to that aggressively. You know, I mean, I know I sound very freaked out, but I don't want people to, you know, keel over or head for the hills. I think what we should do is make sure the turnout this fall is as high as possible. And that means people have to make sure that they're registered and bring their papers with them and all that. They should also be prepared to monitor this next election. You know, I mean, I'm pleased to say the last election was the most heavily monitored at the grassroots level in history. This next one has to be even more carefully monitored. People have to bring their cell phones, their video cameras, maybe be prepared to take down firsthand accounts from people who weren't able to vote. And there's got to be, you know, a really big push to get this information out there. But I think that people, above all, have to be psychologically prepared for them to try to pull off once again what they pulled off last time and the time before. Because this time, you know, people have to say no. I mean, it's been Now, actually, if you count the midterm elections, it's four elections that they have variously stolen. Even the election in 2006, which I know a lot of Democrats were ecstatic about because they were allowed to claim 29 House seats. The fact is, Mike, that the Democrats probably won at least 50 seats in that election cycle, which was rife with fraud. But, you know, being the kind of wimps that they are, they often instructed candidates to throw in the towel and not fight about it. I think people have got to face the fact that our declaration, our founding declaration, makes abundantly clear that ultimately, you know, we're the ones who decide what should happen, or we ought to be the ones. We can't sit around and wait for the Democrats, who are enablers of the Republicans. We certainly can't sit around and wait for the media, because, you know, they're practically hopeless.
Right.
So if and when it happens again, people have to be prepared to refuse to accept it. Now, if we get to that point, if there's not some other, you know, incredibly dramatic thing that comes down to postpone the election, say, then people have to be prepared to fight, to resist. And I'm really not prepared to say exactly what I mean by that, because we're sort of in uncharted territory here. But also, you know, while we're talking about all this, we also must be mindful of the possibility that this regime will indeed, you know, try something really hairy so that we don't even get to an election. And I think the worst thing people can do is to deny that possibility, because if they do that and it then happens, they will feel blindsided. And when you're blindsided, you're paralyzed. I mean, you know, the whole assumption behind some kind of surprise move is that it will take people up short and that they won't know what to do.
Well, you know, when you said you don't want people to run away or fall down, for some reason, I immediately, as soon as you said that, I got the image of those goats that when you scare them, they fall down on the ground. Well, the fainting goats. That's right. Yeah, we don't want to be fainting goats. So what you're saying then, Mark, I wish we would have gotten the book. It didn't come from your publisher, but this all weaves into your book, Loser Take All: Election Fraud and the Subversion of Democracy, 2000-2008. But if I'm understanding you, the election, if it's close between McCain and Obama, it will be stolen. If it's within, say, 10 percentage points, at least an attempt will be made to steal it.
Right.
And if the theft is not successful, then between November 7th or whenever the election is and January, whatever the inauguration date is, somewhere in that time frame, there is a very strong possibility that the Bush crime family will orchestrate an event that might prevent the Democrat taking power.
Well, I would say, I mean, you know, they're extremely good at this kind of thing.
They are indeed.
There's a myth that they are incompetent. I think that's a dangerous myth. When it comes to the subversion of democracy, they're extremely skilled.
They're real good at that, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Mark, can you hold on again?
Yeah, sure.
All right, you can stick around a little bit longer?
Sure.
All right, we got to do a break here, so we'll come back right after the break. We're talking with Professor Mark Crispin Miller, author and also professor of media studies at NYU. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Redefining Anger Management. It's Mike Malloy, only on Nova M Radio.
It's about 26 before the hour. We're talking to Mark Crispin Miller, professor of media studies at NYU and prolific author on the way things are and the way they shouldn't be. His newest book is Loser Take All, Election Fraud and the Subversion of Democracy, 2000 to 2008. A couple emails here, Mark, during the break. Andre writes, New York also had these terrorist drills going on a few weekends ago. Lots of mile-long police entourages snaking through Manhattan. More military presence. Mark is scaring me because others think what I think. I wonder if the Democrats in Congress know this, about the possible plans of martial law. Yada, yada, yada. That's from Andre in New York. Here's another one. This is from Randy in San Francisco. Regarding the Mark Crispin Miller interview, thanks for putting him on. Maybe you could enlighten us as to how to prepare for the worst-case scenario he speaks of. It would be good to have information on how to communicate, if at all possible, should the government shut down the airwaves, the Internet, so on and so forth. And then this one from RJ, and we talked about this last night, Mark, from yesterday's Indianapolis Star. There are military drills and urban warfare plans in that city, I think, coming up this weekend. And RJ says, what are they setting us up for? Post-Obama assassination riots, martial law being declared, postponing the election. And then the last one, regarding Mark Crispin Miller, he's saying what I've been thinking. And I was wondering why the Bush cabal haven't taken out Simple Scotty. They don't care about Scott McClellan. Their backs are against the wall, and these people have bigger fish to fry. These are the types of people who don't think they'll be taken alive and do anything to make that so. And that's from Eleanor. So given, this is just a sample of, what have I got here? Probably about 35 emails about people who, from people who are concerned about what you're saying. I don't touch on this subject an awful lot, Mark, because it freaks me out. But after I watched and played for our audience your 7-minute video the other night, it's obviously been a topic for discussion. So,
well, it should be. And I hadn't heard about this stuff in Indianapolis or actually in New York, and I live here. I'm sitting here at Bleecker and Mercer, talking to you on the phone. I hadn't noticed those things going on here. But clearly a lot of stuff is going on. Let me add something. This is both weirdly comforting and also interesting. A lot of people on the left tend to think that the system we're dealing with is a unified or unitary system, that all the powerful interests out there are sort of working together. That's actually not the case. What makes this moment interesting is sort of similar to what made the 60s and early 70s interesting, which is that there is actually a rift within or between the elites themselves. Wall Street and a significant sector of the corporate world are quite eager to see the backs of the Bush regime. In 2006, the Democrats got far more money from Wall Street than the Republicans did. And at the moment, both Obama and Clinton are getting, maybe two-thirds more money from Wall Street, or at least from the financial services industry, than McCain is getting. The fact is that these guys are really bad for business, I mean, they're good for their cronies, they're good for their pals, they're good for Halliburton and so on, but they're lousy for the economy, and anyone who's even half awake has clearly noticed that the economy is in terrible condition. So those interests, I think, are far more eager to see Obama, for example, be president than McCain. When you got Paul Volcker and Warren Buffett coming out for Obama, that some people are eager for a change. And I also think that the military is divided. I mean, we've been hearing a lot from Mikey Weinstein and Jason Leopold and others about the Christianist movement within the military.
Right.
There are also people in the military who have their heads screwed on right and who believe in the Constitution. This is one of the reasons why the Bush regime has had to buy its own army, which is Blackwater. It isn't as if we're all entirely by ourselves here. There are powerful interests that don't want this stuff to happen. I am not suggesting for a moment that we should leave it up to them, because I don't think their interests are democratic interests, small d. I mean, I'm just a fervent believer in America's system of Republican democracy, in our checks and balances, in the Bill of Rights. And I guess all I can really say is that we can't affirm those things often or strongly enough, you know.
Well, let me regarding what you just said about the support, and of course it's not universal, but the noticeable support from, say, Wall Street or corporate America or people like Warren Buffett for Barack Obama, given that the corporatization of this country is in direct opposition to the Democratic Republican sort of government that you just said that you believe in,
right.
Do you find anything spooky about the fact that corporate America is backing Obama?
Oh, yeah, I do. I mean, look, let me be perfectly frank here. You know, a lot of my friends have long since drunk the Kool-Aid. You know, now I'm supporting Obama because, you know, I think the Bush Republicans really are a criminal operation. Mm. And, you know, where they're not criminal, they're just demented. And I think that McCain is in very tight with them, and he represents something deeply dangerous and sort of overtly fascistic. I do think that the Democratic Party is not particularly interested in democracy and is prone to a kind of soft fascism and is corrupt as well as mm-hmm. the Republican Party is corrupt, because our political system is completely corrupt. It's dominated by big money.
Right.
So I've been saying for months, you know, that while I appreciate Obama's skills as a politician, and I'm very much impressed by his young supporters, I think that if he is allowed to prevail, you know, while on the one hand I will breathe a sigh of relief, I'm also pretty convinced that a lot of my progressive friends are going to be very disappointed in him.
Yeah.
Because he's a centrist, you know, and I'm from Illinois, so, you know, I kind of know maybe mm-hmm. a little more about him than other people, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I am impressed by him in many ways. I have to salute him for having run a largely honest campaign, which I can't say for Clinton. He is authentically the choice of the grassroots in this country, and even some Republicans who weren't, you know, taking their orders from Rush Limbaugh.
Right.
But he's, you know, it's true that we don't. You know, we don't have a real choice in this race because, you know, the tragedy of a winner-take-all system like ours is that a third party, whether it's Cynthia McKinney or Ralph Nader, you know, they're going to end up being used by the Republicans. They were used by the Republicans in the past. Nader's campaign got a lot of support from the Republican. I've discussed this with Ralph, so,
right.
you know, he and I actually go way back. But, you know, when you've got the Republicans fighting to put your name on the ballot, you know, you know that, you know, if you don't have a system for proportional representation, which would allow several parties to compete, you know,
mm-hmm.
A third party just isn't going to help us out.
Is it going to take that, Mark, to rescue our political system from the mess it's in? And the obvious ending that we're facing regarding our system, is it going to take a not necessarily a parliamentary form, but a proportional voting?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that most people in this country are now really pretty sick of both parties.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it weren't for the media giving us a daily misimpression of something like normalcy, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you watch the TV news, you think, oh, everything's bubbling along, okay, there are some weak spots, blah, blah, blah. But the media has this effect of making things seem to be in better shape than they are. I think people are probably ready for, you know, a more competitive and diverse political system. Let me add that as far as the elections are concerned, there are definitely things that we can do, steps we can definitely take to make the elections fair and honest. The last thing in Loser Take All is my own 12 steps to save U.S. democracy. This just has to do with the mechanics of elections,
mm-hmm.
not with, you know, big money in campaigns, proportional representation, not those deeper issues. But it's about, you know, getting rid of the electronic voting machines, banning the participation of private companies in the process. My favorite point is making it illegal for the networks to call the race before all the votes have been counted.
Right.
Putting video surveillance in the polling places to prevent voter fraud, you know, as opposed to these Jim Crow laws that actually end up disenfranchising a lot of people.
And either getting rid of the touchscreen voting or making it open source programs that run it rather than proprietary information that nobody can check.
Well, if we're going to have computerized machines, we should definitely have open source. But I'm against computerized machines.
So am I. Yeah.
I think they amount to a secret vote count, and that's not, you know, that's
right.
Got nothing to do with America or shouldn't have. So, you know, I think that things can definitely be fixed. Don't get me wrong. But they can't be fixed if we continue to deny the problems that need to be fixed. See, once we face what's going on, and once we all recognize how many of us are actually in fundamental agreement, because it's way more of us than we've been led to think, thanks to our fixed elections.
Mm-hmm.
Once we come to that place, I have no doubt that we can get through this. It's not going to be easy, but I think it's possible.
I hear you. Mark, one more break, okay?
Sure.
All right, we're talking with Mark Crispin Miller, professor of media studies at NYU and author of his latest book, Loser Take All, Election Fraud and the Subversion of Democracy, 2000 to 2008. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Cover it up when you sleep. Hide the roaches and the way you feel behind a yes, sir, and a yes, ma'am. And I understand. There's nothing to prove to the world. There's nothing to prove to the world. There's nothing to rebel against when you get home, home. I understand.
Ready for Radical Talk Radio? Make mine Mike Malloy on Nova M.
We're talking, Tim, before the hour, we're talking with Mark Crispin Miller, professor of media studies at NYU and author. His latest book is Loser Take All, Election Fraud and Subversion of Democracy, 2000 to 2008. You may have already answered this. If the election is stolen, if it is clear that it's stolen, A, or B, if a move is made to declare martial law as a result or suspend the Constitution as a result of an event that is pretty clearly an engineered event, although I don't know how we would tell that given the expertise of these bastards where it concerns setting up national tragedies. But in either of these events, what would you recommend that people do to prepare for this? Now, I know you've said, Mark, all of us have got to become assiduous poll watchers. We've got to make sure to the best of our ability that people are stepping into these polling places and actually getting to vote without some freak screaming about a photo ID, which, by the way, I think that's going to have a very serious effect on this election coming.
It's meant to. It's meant to.
Yeah, absolutely. So what can we do? What would you tell people? Because I'm getting emails. What would Mark Crispin Miller have us do?
Well, look, it seems to me that people should do what I've been doing and what I'm doing now. You know, I mean, I don't have a to-do list for how you should function mm-hmm. once the iron fist comes down. I wouldn't even pretend to know what to do. I'm not a survivalist. I've never lived through anything like this.
Right.
Understandably, people are very anxious, to hear what I have to say. I would channel that anxiety into pushing every single day, starting tomorrow, to make sure that the press and one's representatives deal with this issue. Frankly, Mike, I am tired of listening to a lot of really worthy progressives, listening to progressive voices going on and on about the election, talking about Obama, he did a good job here, or Hillary's doing a terrible job there, or talking about McCain's ties to lobbyists. All the stuff that people tend to talk about when they talk about elections is ultimately beside the point. If the system has been profoundly rigged, if it's been gamed, if our weapons have had the bullets stolen out of them, if you see what I mean.
Sure.
Everybody's doing maneuvers, you know. Mm-hmm. Everybody's training out there in the field. They haven't checked to see if there are bullets in their rifles, you know.
Right, right, yeah.
Now, this is not going to change unless and until we address it, we talk about it, we get, you know, Keith Olbermann, who's obviously very pleased with himself, you know, for being a stand-up guy and reading the Riot Act to the administration. He won't talk about this issue. Rachel Maddow, she won't talk about this issue. Michael Moore, he won't talk about this issue. The Nation, Mother Jones, they won't deal with it. The Columbia Journalism Review, they won't talk about this issue. Where's Bill Moyers? Where is everybody? Why aren't they talking about it? I mean, I could sit here and in a couple of minutes list things to read that make abundantly clear that these elections have been stolen. I want to repeat this. It's not speculation. It's fact.
Right.
Now, since it is fact, okay, and since it is quite possible that it could happen again, our only real protection lies in being open about it, you know? Because the surest way to go through a disaster is to deny that it's staring you right in the face.
Mm-hmm.
See what I'm saying?
Sure, absolutely. Absolutely.
So let's, you know, let's kind of cut the crapola here and at long last, you know, talk about what it is the Republicans have been doing and the Democrats have been letting them get away with. The Obama campaign, let me say, is entirely clueless on this whole thing, you know.
Right.
They think, yeah, we're going to have a lot of lawyers, don't worry, we're not going to let happen what happened 4 years ago. Well, you know, 4 years ago, the Kerry campaign had a lot of lawyers ready because they were saying, oh, we're not going to let happen what happened to Gore, see. So we can't leave it up to them. We have to insist that they all start to talk about it at long last. I mean, I just testified in Congress 2 weeks ago before a couple of subcommittees of the House Judiciary Committee, thanks to John Conyers. We were talking about election fraud and the Department of Justice's tendency to turn a blind eye to it when it affects Democrats. Well, my God, of course they turn a blind eye to it. They're complicit in it themselves, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But we've simply got to face it. And it may finally come down to, you know, if we're going to start to talk in more romantic terms about some kind of mass action or taking to the streets, which is not the kind of thing I recommend these days, because our military is equipped with really ferocious kinds of crowd control devices that can
right.
really hurt people.
Mm-hmm.
I think we should, you know, maybe consider directing our collective energies towards protests right in the doorstep of the mainstream media. You know, I'd like to see 5,000 people in front of the New York Times building or in front of TV stations in the big cities or in front of the daily papers, people saying, why haven't you been reporting on what's been happening to our elections? You know, without the right to vote, you know, we essentially have no freedoms at all. That's what Tom Paine said, that the right to vote is the foundation on which all our other rights depend. And even though elections per se are not, they by no means represent the full range of devices that we have at our disposal as the citizens of a democracy. There's many other things we can and must do. That one is essential.
It
that
is.
One is fundamental, and we can't afford to let it be taken away from us.
That's so true. As usual, Mark, you have given me, and I'm sure this audience, some very serious things to think about. Let's talk again before the election.
Absolutely. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
And thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for being on the program. Take care. Take
okay,
care, Mark.
Bye-bye.
All right. Loser Take All, Election Fraud and the Subversion of Democracy 2000-2008. That's the name of his book. Mark Crispin Miller, professor of media studies at NYU. Check him out. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
the music to the story in your eyes. It's been shining down upon you now.
Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. Yeah, anytime we have Mark Crispin Miller on, you know, for about 3 days afterwards, I'm just kind of totally focused on what he says, and especially this time. All of the stuff that's going on right now where it concerns these war games and maneuvers and so on and so forth that are occurring in city after city with the appropriate declarations from the governor or the mayor or the officer in command of the operation. This is relatively new phenomenon, isn't it? I mean, I can't remember when we have been in other wars having this sort of activity on our city streets. I do remember it's probably one of my earliest memories of when I was in nursery school and World War II was still going on. It was almost over, but matter of fact, it was a month from being over. But I vaguely remember something that has stuck with me all my life, and that is at the place that obviously my parents dropped me off so they could go to work. In the late afternoon, they would pull shades down over all the windows, black shades. Now, the place that I was dropped off at nursery school eventually became my elementary school when I was a kid growing up, but they had a sort of a nursery school co-op because everybody was working, all the parents were working for the war effort. And I remember, I just, that's about the only memory, actual memory I have of something odd going on in the city. Now, yeah, when I was a kid growing up in the 50s, yeah, we had the duck and cover drills and so on and so forth. But all of this stuff about preparing us for what? Does somebody really believe, now think about this for a minute, that there's going to be some sort of massive invasion of Muslim terrorists to the extent that whatever has not been shredded of the U.S. military has to get into the streets and get involved in urban warfare in this country? Ostensibly, that's the cover story. Well, this is in preparation for some sort of an invasion, some sort of activity that would constitute an act of war against the United States. You and I know that that's bat squeeze. I mean, your common sense tells you this. So what does that leave? Well, before we get to that, why does your common sense tell you that? How in the hell is this country going to be invaded by a bunch of Islamic terrorists, which is that's supposed to be our enemy? Now, the quick answer would be, well, Malloy, from the right-wingers, they did it on September 11, 2001. Well, if they did, if that event occurred as it occurred, as the Bush crime family tells us it occurred only because of their incompetence. They allowed it to happen. Or, in a much worse case scenario, they facilitated its happening. Oh, and by the way, the people have been writing emails to me, how's come you're not talking about 9/11? We will. I said it would be periodic. But we will get back to that probably next week. But anyway, I digress. So if we are to believe that these war games and these terror exercises and sending the military down the streets of Indianapolis or Toledo, Ohio, or whatever city is chosen for these war games, with proclamations from the mayor and people, the citizens of these cities, kind of in a bemused way watching, oh, my God, look at this. Here come, you know, with convoys of military personnel rolling down the streets, highly militarized police units. I swear to God, some of the SWAT teams look like people who are about to go into war on a distant planet, a planet someplace in a different star system. They look like they came from George Lucas's imagination. And these are local police. For Christ's sake, the United States Marines don't dress like that when they're ready to invade something. But the next time there is reason for your local SWAT team to be called out, and you live in a big city or a medium-sized city, take a look at them. They look like they're going on a 9-day patrol looking for Gorgons who have invaded, and the spaceship has just been found. Son of a bitch. I mean, it is really weird stuff. All right, so why are these exercises occurring? The cover story is because we need to be prepared. Oh, okay. Prepared for what? An invasion of Muslims. Ah, all right. And that will come from, where? How exactly is that going to happen? Well, Mike, they'll come across the border with suitcase bombs. Oh, okay. All right. That's certainly understandable. And how are these military operations going to prevent that from happening? Well, the quick answer is they're not. And the quicker answer is, or the longer answer is, these operations, these drills, these exercises have nothing whatsoever to do with responding to an invasion of Muslim terrorists, and everything to do with responding to an order, a directive, numbered 51 by George W. Bush, to declare martial law, and the people in the various cities and the various states of the United States say, wait a goddamn minute, what do you mean, martial law? Why? And if enough of us take to the streets, then, bingo. The forces to put down such an insurrection or mild rebellion have already been trained and disciplined in how to put it down. Now, is that too spooky? Is that too tinfoil hat-ish? Is that too conspiratorial? If you think it is, then you're a fool. You're an absolute moron or a Republican. Or, well, that's redundant. I understand. These bastards have had 8 years, and I have to say that Clinton got this ball rolling, this militarized everything ball rolling. How did he do that? Well, how many instances do you want from the Clinton years? Do you want Waco? Do you? What do you need? Regardless of your feelings about David Koresh and the poor, suckered-in people who surrounded him. The fact is, I'm not going to rehash Waco here. If you don't know what happened, then look it up. But that was an absolute exercise in government power, saying to a dissident group of people who had weird little jerk-ass religious beliefs, as they all are, but this one was no weirder than the Pastor Hagee. So they go in with tanks and flamethrowers and butcher how many people? Huh? Burn them alive. How many women, children, and men burned alive? And that happened in the Clinton years, didn't it? Wasn't that back in 93? 94? Hell, I don't know. Too long ago to matter, right, Mr. Bush? So here we are now with militarized local constabulary who will shoot your ass in a second. You're here to do what? Protest? As you know, they say through these faceplates that cops wear now. You're here to do what? Get off the street, citizen. Get off the street. I'm here to exercise. Get off the goddamn street. And when you don't? So if you believe that all these drills and exercises are being put into place to prevent or respond to an invasion by Muslim terrorists, you must be crazy. You really must be crazy. They pull your car over.
free and secure Iraq in the midst of the Middle East will have enormous historical impact.
Anyone ever figure out what this dumb bastard meant with appeance, freeance, Iraq? Jesus, never mind. A couple of emails here. This one's off topic, but it just crossed our email here from the Associated Press. Bahrain, the very wealthy Middle Eastern Muslim country, has appointed a woman believed to be the Arab world's first Jewish ambassador as the country's envoy to Washington. Bahrain names a Jewish woman as ambassador to the U.S. Do you suppose Israel would appoint an Arab to be ambassador? No, never mind. Her name is Houda Nonau. She said she was proud to serve her country, quote, first of all, as a Bahraini, end quote, and then adding she was not chosen for the post because of her religion. She said, quote, it's a great honor to have been appointed as the first female ambassador of the United States of America. I'm looking forward to meeting this new challenge. The decree issued yesterday, issued by King Hamad bin Isa Al Khalifa and reported by the official Bahrain news agency, did not specify where this woman, who is 43 years old and the mother of two boys, would be posted. Bahrain, of course, is a close ally of the Bush crime family and allows the U.S. Navy's Fifth Fleet to be there. Population of the country is about 500,000, has about 50 Jewish citizens. There's also a synagogue and a private Jewish cemetery in the city, Manama, Bahrain. At the height of the Arab-Israeli war, it doesn't say which one, the synagogue was attacked and torched by angry Muslims. The structure was later refurbished. Bahrain has no diplomatic relations with Israel. Interesting. Just when you think that pigs can't fly, bacon comes soaring in your window, so to speak. Ooh, that was not a... HV in Montrose, California writes, Mike, I listened with interest to your diatribe against Scott McClellan. While I locked into much of what you had to say, there are a couple of facts you overlooked. How true that we've all heard this before, but who are we? Recall that not long ago, over 50% of Americans still believe that Saddam had weapons of mass destruction. These are not the people who joined the liberal choir, who did research, who knew Bush was not a man to be trusted. Whether or not Scott contributed to the evil and kept silent when he should have spoken is not important to the point I make, and that is this. He is now in the forefront of the news for all to see and hear. He has broken the silence that the media protected. I would guess that even the ditto heads must have something to think about. It's everywhere, and that is healthy for our country. Also, I'm certain Scott, at the time he became press secretary, was a staunch conservative and believed the crap that was fed him. We know many Republicans who, in spite of being educated and supposedly smart, would defend, and some still do, Bush and company's destructive policies. Let's give Scott some benefit of the doubt. I believe he did a service to this country, even by coming out late. This may have a profound effect on future policies. Continue to damn him if you will, but take a broader view. HVH in Montrose, California. Well, that's a good point. My boss, Anita, suggested the same thing to me earlier tonight in an email that I answered by being kind of flip. all right. Point taken from both HVH and Anita that regardless of Scott McClellan's complicity, And it is a good point. The story is out there. I can't separate the story from the man, and that's my problem. Both my emailers here are probably more correct about his effect on people in this country. if people are paying attention. Now, a lot of Fox News Channel viewers and a lot of Limbaugh nutcases are going to adopt the Ari Fleischer line or the line that's coming from so many Dana Perino, so many people in the Bush crime family, that Scott essentially has lost his mind. You know, while they bust up on him, they don't deny what he's saying. And again, I guess I should learn to separate the man from the message in this particular instance, and that is another in a ever lengthening list of faults that I'm discovering here as I do talk radio. My faults. That I can't seem to do that. Maybe because I'm just lazy. So okay, I certainly agree with HVH and Anita that Scott McClellan's coming forth has flipped some heads pretty severely. There's an awful lot of whiplash going on out there in the past 72 hours, I'm sure. It's hard being right all the time, you know? I mean, it just doesn't work, you know, when you try. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Phone calls, I think, when we come back.
Day Screaming with Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
My promises are snapped in two, words are made to bear.
It's about 25 before the hour. Let me mention this also. Mark Kristen Miller will be a guest on the Drobny's program, The Cutting Edge. That's Sunday, 9 a.m. on KPHX in Phoenix. If you want to stream it, and you can, it'll be noon Eastern time or 10 o'clock Central time, you know, blah, blah, blah. That's Shelley and Anita Drobny's program, The Cutting Edge. Mark will be their guest this Sunday coming at 9 a.m. Phoenix time on KPHX. And you can stream it online, of course. Debbie from Sacramento wrote, Mike, yesterday Randy Rhodes had Jonathan Turley on her show, and she asked him why nothing has been done about impeachment. Turley answered that he thinks the Democrats had foreknowledge about torture and wiretapping, and they were complicit. I think he's right, Debbie writes, if it's the only thing that makes any sense. They are covering their own asses so they can win the election, the Democrats. There is no democracy. Constitutional rights have been squashed, and it's all about power and greed. Why isn't anyone talking about this? I personally do not intend to go off silently and hope others get off their asses and scream at the top of, and I'll scream at the top of my lungs. I didn't know that Turley, I've seen him before, that is he suggesting that Democrats knew about torture and wiretapping? Okay. Well, I not that that's unusual. Of course they did. But as a reason to not go after Bush, I don't know. Maybe Turley's right. I can't understand that. From... from two MCs, is that right? Mike, with all I heard today about the Bush administration and their push for the war in Iraq at any cost, about the McClellan thing, I would bet my last nickel that Karl Rove had something to do with that anthrax attack after 9/11 that was sent to the Senate office building. It fits. Yeah, you notice that's gone? Nobody talks about that. You know the other thing that's gone? Remember the terror alerts? Remember the candy-colored, coated lifesavery thing? We have U.S. military and local police practicing terror drills. And the terror alert thing, why is that nowhere around anymore? What happened? Were the terrorists defeated? Remember that? What the hell gives in this place? Jesus, God. We're not going to get to half of what I wanted to get to tonight, but let's do some phone calls here before. Start with Sanchez, who's been holding on for 2.5 hours, calling from KTLK, listening on KTLK in Mont Bella, California. Hey, Sanchez.
A very good evening to you, sir.
How you doing?
I think we're still at orange level, don't you think? I don't remember it going any higher than orange level terror alert.
I know. Every time I go to the Phoenix airport or the Atlanta airport, anytime I fly someplace where you have in the airport you have these recorded announcements, that's what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Attention, please.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are at orange level. Please report. So maybe you're right. Maybe we're still at orange.
Okay. Well, I wanted to address something here very quickly that Mark Crispin Miller was talking about protesting the press, the corporate media. That's actually already started about a month ago. Remember when the ABC hosted the Democratic debates and the shoddy journalistic approach they took to the whole thing? The following weekend, that was part of a little demonstration that took place in front of the corporate headquarters of Disney there in Burbank. So we are starting to do stuff like that, just to let you know. And it was very nice because I met some very cool people there at the same time. So
you know, it's kind of a shame that CNN's headquarters are here in Atlanta. You can't get 1,000 Atlantans together to protest anything that goes on, or 1,000 Georgians for that matter, because everybody down here is either exhausted, brain dead, or completely mentally annihilated by right-wing talk radio and right-wing media. That's a shame. It's too bad CNN is not in San Francisco or New York or Chicago or Minneapolis, where people would go there.
Yeah,
and
they do have a studio in Hollywood, and a lot of the protests that I've been a part of, a lot of the Hollywood marches, end. They start at like Hollywood and Vine, and then they wind around the streets of Hollywood and then end up with a makeshift stage in front of the CNN building. You would think that any of these media outlets would cover it, but it hardly ever gets any attention. And this is a perfect night, this Scott McClellan thing and all of this entire issue. This is a perfect opportunity to really, really challenge the corporate media at this point. They're pretending to go through this soul-searching thing. You saw Brian Williams and Katie Couric and all of the morning hosts were discussing, oh, well, we were intimidated, and oh, we were lied to, and all of this stuff. But it's merely window dressing, Mike. I mean, at any given time, they could give us the truth, as you so correctly say, and this man would be impeached. But, you know, they're just as complicit as Scott McClellan is. They're not going to do anything about it. It's just one day's worth of soul searching. You think they're going to continue exposing what's going on with Iran? You think they're going to – I've yet to see any corporate media give any exposure to the Winter Soldier.
Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
There's nothing going on here. So, you know, you wonder, why isn't Scott McClellan in chains at this point in some prison cell? I mean, he lied to the country. It's a nearly a treasonous action that this man is complicit. He knew he was lying, and the big reason, the big problem he had about it is the fact that the Bush administration lied to him. But he doesn't have a problem lying to the rest of the country, and I don't get that, man. Why isn't this man in prison?
Well, I'm kind of torn about McClellan. On the one hand, I agree with these two emails I've read here. On the other hand, I don't believe for a second that he was totally out of the loop, even though John Dean said tonight on Overman's program that in so many instances, a press secretary is deliberately left out of the loop. But this is not just a press secretary. This is a guy who'd been with Bush since the Texas years.
Yeah.
He was part of the inner circle. So, you know, I'm really obviously having a lot of conflict about this. Sanchez, let me move something else.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask you, because you asked an excellent question yesterday. And when you watched the media coverage on McClellan, all the interviews, did he ever say he was sorry?
No. Not even close to it. Hey, thanks, Sanchez.
Okay, man.
All right, appreciate it. I think if Sanchez didn't allude to this, somebody else did this evening. But Glenn Greenwald at Salon.com has a lengthy story on Jessica Yellen and the complicity of media. That's very timely. Jessica Yellen was she's currently a CNN correspondent who covered the White House for ABC News and MSNBC in 2002 and 2003. And she was on CNN last night with Anderson Cooper discussing McClellan's book. And she made one of the most significant admissions heard on television in quite some time. Here's what she said, quote, "I think the press corps dropped the ball at the beginning. When the lead-up to the war began, the press corps was under enormous pressure from corporate executives, frankly, to make sure that this was a war that was presented in a way that was consistent with the patriotic fever in the nation and the president's high approval ratings. And my own experience at the White House was that the higher the president's approval ratings, the more pressure I had from news executives. And the more pressure I had from news executives to put on positive stories about the president." Cooper says, "You had pressure from news executives to put on positive stories about the president?" Oh, come on, Anderson. Jessica answers, "Not in that exact, they wouldn't say it exactly that way, but they would edit my pieces. They would push me in different directions. They would turn down stories that were critical and try to put on pieces that were positive. Yes, that was my experience." Jessica Yellen, who is still working at CNN, oddly enough, I would imagine she's still there today. I worry about American journalists. How many journalists have been murdered in Iraq? I think it's over 100, 150, it may be higher than that. In Russia, a journalist who tries to, and they're becoming more and more rare, a journalist who tries to expose the corruption in the Putin government is usually murdered very quickly murdered, shot 7, 8, 9, 10 times in the head, usually when the reporter is trying to get into his or her apartment, just shot down, boom, gone. And, you know, Putin always says, "Well, this is bad," and nothing ever happens. When's it going to start happening in this country? I do get concerned about this. I realize we're kind of spinning out of control here tonight, aren't we? But given the all the talk about McClellan's book and given our conversation with Mark Crispin Miller, and knowing what you and I know and have known for the past 8 years, it's hard. It's hard sometimes not to just totally give in to almost hysteria. Like Mark Miller said, he doesn't want people to go running into the streets or to fall down. You know, and just, I'm sure he meant just roll up in a tight little ball. He doesn't want that to happen. There's got to be a positive, thoughtful way to react to this, to what has happened so far and what may happen within the next 5 or 6 months. I'm not sure what that is, I don't think Mark was either. But I just know that it's more and more difficult for me to keep things under control to the extent that I do. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. Especially when the company cap is Kenny Lay. Meanwhile, sweat stops 10 pennies a day. Big bank, take little bank anyway. Why the country's always going to war for many days. John Bush playing Family Feud with the time. Survey said, oops, you out of time. We the only ones allowed to have nuclear bombs. Guaranteed it won't be another Vietnam. 9-1-1 ain't a joke no more. Nowadays, it's a whole different approach to war. Bin Laden, been hiding out of Pakistan. And you want to be heard, better clap your hands. Come on. It's about 10 before the hour. Thanks to the folks who brought you the program tonight, starting with Ian Huff, who engineered and handled your calls, our technical director, Billy Foster, our podcast manager, Ben Birch, Bob Alexander, our resident philosopher, Bridget Wolf, our writer-in-residence, and Sharon Gordy, our military affairs correspondent, and, of course, Catherine Bay, the executive producer. Don't forget two things. We would love to have you as one of the founders of Nova M Radio. Go to our website, if you're so inclined, novamradio.com. It is $100 a year, or $10 a month, and there are some definite benefits to becoming a founding member. Also, if you haven't yet, check out the website, novamradio.com, and my website, the new one, mikemalloy.com, both of which thanks to a great degree to Billy Foster, our technical director. Back to your phone calls. Marissa is calling from Connecticut, listening via the Internet. Hey, Marissa.
Hi. Good evening, Mike.
Hi.
Thank you for all your shows. I'm a longtime listener.
Well, that's wonderful. Thank you.
And thank you for, and also thank you so much for your brilliant commentary on your website. I enjoy that every day to read.
Oh, that's two wonderful compliments that quick. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Everything talked about, and I have so much going through my head. First of all, it's Mark Chris Miller. I was getting flashbacks from election night 2004, where remember all the major networks were saying, if you observe any,
right,
go to this website and log in or call this number. And I remember sitting there on these websites and log entry after log entry, coming up with some really strange things happening at the polling places. And Judy Woodruff on CNN saying, oh, everything's smooth. There's not one incident being reported, you know. So that's where the surrealism really started. And then tuning into you and then, Randy, and just downloading articles from the local Ohio press, you know,
mm-hmm.
and bringing these to my friends and these progressive parties. And everybody was just so bewildered or hung up on the family values thing, where if you actually believe the family values argument, the argument was that John Kerry won with family values, because the same polls that were saying family values were also saying John Kerry won the election.
Right.
So I was kind of very interesting when Mark brought this up, that these progressives, nobody wants to talk about this issue, not just the corporate media, but the progressives. And he mentioned Michael Moore, mm-hmm. and I remember hearing reports that Michael Moore was in Ohio on election night actually filming polling places. And I'm hoping that his next film will be on this, but
I think
why he's not talking.
Yeah, I think that's the skinny or the rumor that's out there is that is his next target.
Oh, great.
And I do hope that's the case. And if it is the case, I just hope that it's done before the November election. But I haven't heard anything substantive about that.
Yeah, a couple more things. And we were just trying to brainstorm during the break as about what we can do. And my... maybe we can contact who is behind YouTube, just maybe ask them to free up massive amounts of space on their server on election night that we can all download or dump into our video clips that we take the media in our own hands, so to speak, and don't give power to CNN to report, because they're mm-hmm. not going to report. Also, the 527s, is there any way we can give money to 527s to start to, who can buy lawyers for us or put in ads after the election, this is what happened, post these pictures on these mm-hmm. major corporate outlets and whatnot. I don't know if that's ever existed or if that can happen. And also my other comment was about Scotty McKellen. I wanted to get your take on this. I was very surprised that the corporate media has even given him any time to talk. I thought that the short clip that I heard from Olbermann talking to Rachel Maddow Tuesday night, they just described the book briefly, and I thought that was going to be the end of the story, and the rest of the stories are going to be this guy's completely insane. They're going to throw him under the bus like they did Richard Clark. So I wanted to get your take on why they even given this guy any time to even talk.
That's the thing that's kind of puzzling to me, except for the fact that politics to media types is really a blood sport. What they're reporting on when they report on politics, they don't report on politics. They report on the gossip of politics in the same way that a Hollywood reporter doesn't report on the movies being produced in Hollywood or the films, but rather on the private lives and the sanities of the actors and actresses. If you pay attention to any so-called news channel where they are covering politics, for example, just any of them. Chris Matthews would be a good example. You'll notice that they're not talking about the political issues that are critical to people like you and me. What they're talking about is Barack Obama said this, Hillary Clinton said that, this preacher said that. What do you think of this? All it is gossip of a political nature. If you listen closely, they are talking about politics in the same manner that a Hollywood reporter talks about the film industry, and that is to only talk about the actors and actresses. So that's, I think, how they are treating Scott McLaughlin's book. The attention is not being paid to the crimes committed by the Bush administration that Scott McLaughlin talks about. The attention is being paid to what's going to happen to Scotty. Is he betraying their trust in him? Is he a disgruntled employee? What's he trying to say? Oh, my goodness, shock, 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 look here. This is the impression I get anyway. I may be wrong on that, but that's the impression I get.
Yeah. Well,
so that would answer the question of why they're putting McLaughlin on.
Yeah.
Because it's more insider gossip. Okay, Bush did this, Cheney did that, Rove did that. Why not remove the bastards from office then? You know, I mean, shouldn't that be the bottom line?
Well, yeah.
Hey, listen, Marissa, we're out of time.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, thanks, Marissa. We'll talk again. Thanks for checking in. Hey. All right. Chin up. Come on. Suck in that belly. Stick out those boobs. Come on. Be strong. I'll see you tomorrow night, Truth Seekers. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.